south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Got quite a few emails on that show I did last week talking about Uruguay and all the problems expats are having trying to get temporary and permanent residency there. Turns out it's a delicate process, and anywhere along the way, once you've got your permanent or temporary residency, they can and will find ways to cut you off. So then all your efforts on your way to nationalization, passport, and citizenship will have been in vain. In fact, none of the emails I got from people who'd visited Uruguay or have tried to get residency themselves there have been encouraging. In fact, let's hear this email from Oscar. It says, "Hey Johnny, good show. Everything you said on Uruguay was spot on. In fact, a friend of mine and his wife lived there for 3 years, bought a house and the whole nine yards, resided there full time, but they were denied the citizenship request due to insufficient documentation. Turns out they needed doctor's records and other paperwork, stuff like that. However, they said it was incomplete. In fact, they even appealed and lost. So fed up with the country, they sold everything and moved to Chile. And as far as I know, still in Chile and happy. Keep on keeping on, Johnny. Expat Oscar." Okay, that said, looking at the big Latin newspapers today, here's something I'm sure 99.99% of the world doesn't know because, well, this kind of stuff never makes it into the first world media. According to an early 2016 report by Mexico's National Commission on Human Rights, they've actually raided all the federal prisons in Mexico, all 21 of them. So, for one, did you know that they had 21 federal prisons in Mexico? I doubt they do tours like they do in Alcatraz. Anyway, there's an actual environmental and human rights commission that rates them on a 0 to 10. With a rating of 0, a prison is considered lawless, dangerous, and chaotic, where there's no respect for human rights or dignity of the prisoners. In other words, a lawless jungle. That's what it says here. I'm translating it. So then why am I bringing this up? Is there a chance that gringos and expats could end up in a Mexican jail? Well, if they do, it's all about the money, and you can look up the prison ratings on the internet and buy yourself an upgrade to a nicer place, and if you have enough dough, even buy your way out, depending on what you're in for, of course. Oh, and by the way, in a past show, I told the story of a guy from Colombia that ended up in a Latin prison, and he told me that pretty much throughout Latin America, except for maybe Mexico, if you pay off the head honcho prisoner, the guy that runs the place, around $200 a month, you'll basically have the run of the place, have all the privileges he does, and be the guy's best friend. And be protected 100% of the time. Don't think it's all about the $200 a month either. Of course, to us, that's a tiny amount, really, but very few Latins can pay up. So if you have the bad luck to be there, for $200 a month, you'll be amongst the privileged few. Again, it's not all about the money. My Colombian friend happened to mention that in prison, as well as on the outside, everyone wants to be friends with a gringo because they think you're a rich gringo, thus you are connected and will be able to pull strings for certain friends you made in prison when you get out. Then my Colombian buddy said, never, never dissuade them of that fantasy. Oh, and earlier I did mention that in Mexico it's different. There, to get that kind of protection and privileges will cost you more like $1,000 a month. Not to mention in Mexico there's so many gringos that the gringo advantage has lost its luster. But you knew that already, right? So oddly enough, your gringo advantage works wonders if you ever end up in prison too, which I hope you never do. But that's not at all why I'm bringing up this unpleasant subject. It's like this. Right now, I'm looking at a picture of El Chapo, you know, the famous narcotraficante. The guy, you must have heard by now, escaped prison through a mile-long tunnel he paid to have dug. By the way, he's the guy that's buddy-buddy with Sean Penn. You've seen the photos. I mean, come on, if there's anyone that deserves to be beat to a nub with a selfie stick, it's that dickhead Sean Penn. I'm sure a lot of people would pay to see that. Anyway, listen to this. In an interview he gave last week, Chapo Guzman says of prison number 9 in the 21 federal prison system, the one he spent most of his time in, he says it's a terrible prison to be in. It's got horrible facilities. And it's a shame, he says, that prisoners have to undergo such inhumane conditions, chaos, terrible food, general corruption, and lawlessness. Now, note that prison number 9, the one he was in, was given a rating by the Mexican Human Rights Commission of a solid 6.6 on the 0 to 10 scale, considered above average. Then he goes on to say the U.S. has infinitely better prison systems. He says every U.S. prison he or his friends have been in would be rated at least a 9.5 to a 10 on the Mexican scale. Wow, good news. Sure glad to know that, huh? That explains everything, why it's so much better for a Latin criminal to sneak into the U.S. Then, when he's jailed up in the States, as Chapo Guzman points out, they're like country clubs compared to Mexican prisons. Okay, now in other Latin news I'm sure you've never heard before. This is from Panama. The article says, and it's in Spanish, so I'll translate, Panama immigration authorities at their main airport, Tucumán, have announced that last Friday, the fast pass system went into effect regarding the processing of tourists and visitors to Panama through the airport. It says, thanks to state-of-the-art, newly installed U.S. scanning technology, visitors now only have to walk past a machine which will read their passport chips along with a fingerprint, facial, and iris scan. And it says within 50 seconds of walking through, you'll be identified and logged into the airport and country's immigration database. It goes on to say that within the year, the system will be installed and online at land borders and at the other airports. Well, aren't we all just pleased as punch about that? So bottom line, thanks to the U.S. government and U.S. technology, which was donated to the cause, government press releases are lauding the program, saying, hooray, hooray. Here in Panama, we are no longer third world, at least at our airports and border control points. Unlike airport immigration control in other Latin countries, you no longer have to stand in the immigration line 30 minutes, an hour, even more. Nope, not in Panama. So they say now they can process you in 50 seconds. But we all know that comes with a huge price tag. So I guess we all should be chomping at the bit to go to Panama, huh? Oh, and by the way, it says the next Latin country in line to install this equipment is, give you one guess, Costa Rica. By the way, last time I was in Panama, about 6 months ago, I mentioned they already had some of that facial recognition and digital fingerprint stuff. Yep, that's right. They did the photo and the fingerprint scan. And I stood there watching as all the clueless gringos filed by, smiling politely, even happy to have their photos taken. To them, especially the under 30 crowd, I guess it was just another selfie. As for me, nowadays I'm dead set on not making Panama one of my destinations. However, it's a huge hub for most of the big Latin American airlines like Copa, Taca, Mexicana, and some of the European airlines too. So often you just can't avoid changing planes in Panama. So even if you're flying from a Latin American airport to Europe, there's better than a 50-50 chance you're going to change planes in Panama. The good news, however, is that when you're waiting to change planes, you'll be in the transit area, so you won't have to go through immigration and get bent, probed, stamped, poked, stapled, and mutilated by the fat-ass government airport slugs in Panama. And believe me, the Panama airport has the biggest, fattest government slugs I've ever seen. And unlike in most of the rest of Latin America, they're not even polite or happy. I figure because all day long they see these supposedly rich gringos flying through with all their cool little toys, iPods, designer clothes, and $200 Nikes and hiking boots. And they have that moment to pull that power move on you, to screw with you. And if they can, they will. I mean, it really does seem like, even in Panama, that there's some sort of government affirmative action program to hire people whose asses will only fit in a double-wide John Deere tractor seat. Come on, you know it's the same at airports up in the States, too. And if you think I'm being cruel or you don't believe me, and before you go charging me with the sin of lookism, go ahead, size up some of your own TSA people you see at airports up in the States. Seems like government workers around the world come out of the same baby Huey mold with a brain power to match. God, can I go off on a rant or what? Sorry about that. Now, where were we? Oh yeah, looking at the Latin papers today. We got one last thing here. According to a well-read Latin political magazine called Latino Decisiones, Latin Decisions, and I'll translate here, it says that Hillary Clinton enjoys... Wait a minute, she enjoys? Yeah, that's the direct translation, all right. It says Hillary Clinton enjoys the most simpatía, that's sympathy, boy, of all U.S. presidential candidates. according to a poll of over 20,000 U.S.-based adult Latinos.
God.
Until I read this, I thought she only enjoyed breathing fire and riding on a broomstick. Shows you how wrong a guy could be, huh? However, that does beg the question, if she wins, will she be the Wicked Witch of the West wing? Ooh. Anyway, this outfit, Latino Decisiones, reports that she enjoys 71% confidence and support from adult Latinos up in the States. And Donald Trump, according to this poll, enjoys only 9% support and sympathy from the adult Latin population up in the States. So then what about the other approximately 20% of adult Latinos who were polled? Well, turns out that 20% didn't know who the candidates were from Bozo, who, by the way, I'd definitely vote for if he was on the ballot, as opposed to, let's say, Ronald McDonald. Ronald McDonald, now there's an enigma for you. I've always had this sneaky feeling there's something wrong with that guy. To me, he's always looked kind of like a pervert sitting on that bench in the McDonald's parking lot. By the way, you do have a Ronald McDonald statue sitting on a park bench in most big McDonald's up in the States, don't you? I wouldn't know. I haven't been back in a long, long time. But I can tell you, nearly all the fairly big McDonald's here in Latin America have a bench outside in the parking lot, and old Ronald sitting there with that Bill Clinton half smile on his face. You know what I mean. Oh, and by the way, down here in Latin America, kids do not like sitting on that bench next to Ronald. Turns out they're actually just a little bit afraid of him. Kind of like a liquored-up Santa or Chucky. And I'm not talking Chuck E. Cheese. In fact, expat Eddie tells me, and he'd know, he's in the restaurant business, he says that most of the young ladies that work at the counter at McDonald's are afraid of that Ronald McDonald statue. So the fact is, when you see old Ronald the Perv sitting on that bench outside in the parking lot, no one ever seems to be sitting there with him. As if he had a nasty case of GMOBO. GMOBO. Doesn't that conjure up a revolting image? Make a nice t-shirt, though, huh? But I digress. Man, did I digress. Oh, and by the way, just to complete that thought, you know, all Latin kids know about Chucky, you know, that evil little doll? Yes, all the Chucky movies have been translated into Spanish and have been running over and over again. Even now. Talk about lag time, huh? Okay, but Johnny, get back to the point. All right, already. So why am I bringing up this 70% support for Hillary with Latinos living up in the States? Well, because, coincidentally, that pretty much is the breakdown of the number of illegals living in the United States right now. Yep, some studies say up to 70% of all Latins up in the States are there illegally. If you include the estimated tens of millions who came on a real visa, whether a work visa, student visa, or tourist visa, who decided, hell with it, they're just going to stay and now they're technically illegal. So, isn't that funny? 70% of Latins in the States enjoy Hillary Clinton. You can bet Bill never did. While 70% of Latins in the States are technically illegal. Coincidence or not? By the way, talking about being illegal because you've overstayed your visa, a lot of gringos, especially backpackers, do that down here in Latin America, sometimes inadvertently. However, Latin countries seem to like when you overstay because it's a big source of revenue, and they charge by the day. Now, it's not a lot of money, anywhere from $1 to $2 a day, depending on the country, but believe me, it can add up. In fact, one guy I know, a very smart libertarian/anarchist type, overstayed his visa in Mexico by, get this, 6 years. Well, he told me he would have stayed there forever, and if you stay there forever and never leave, you don't have to pay the exit tax. And he was fine with that. Mexico is a big country, he said. Lots to do, many places to hang out. So he really didn't care and wasn't thinking about it much at all until he met the love of his life, a beautiful young Mexican lady who just happened to get pregnant. You gotta wonder sometimes, huh? So being a solid, upright gringo with good values, he decided to make it legal. Basically a shotgun wedding without the shotgun. But to make it legal, he had to go down to immigration and the municipality. And there, they told him he had to get his immigration status up to snuff, and he had to pay the delinquent fine, which turned out to be something close to $4,000. But he did admit the Mexican government officials never treated him like some kind of a scoundrel or deadbeat. In fact, they were quite nice, because they know a gringo will always find a way to pony up. Now, as for me, many times I've overstayed my 90 days visa in various Latin countries, and when you get to the airport to fly out, or if you're going through a land border, They just won't let you go through that immigration check without paying that $1 or $2 a day fine. And they'll write a little notation in your passport, too. Makes you feel for a second like you've been kind of a bad boy or girl. But don't let that worry you. It never seems to count against you when you go back into that country. At least, not yet. So, you pay the fine at the airport or land border right at immigration, and they always take your money with a smile. No one, it seems, ever gives you a hard look. Why? Because people who overstay their visa are a huge source of income for that country. Which does beg the question, why doesn't the U.S. reciprocate? Yet, I've never heard anyone with a half a brain up in the States mention that. And you won't, because we all know the system's too far gone. It's a runaway train heading for a cliff, which is why you need a plan B and you need it fast. That said, this is a good time to remind you about my Expat Insider Seminar coming up in July 2016. In short, it's a 6-day seminar to fast-track your plan B. Every day you'll get boots on the ground and you'll make the right connections. And to sign up, just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's 2016 seminar link at the top of the page, and you'll find all the info there. And also on the top of the New Expat website, you'll find the link to John Galt's amazing pre- and post-seminar trips. So what's that all about? Well, if you're coming down for the seminar, you'll be a long way from Seattle, New York, or Cleveland. So naturally, you'll want to fit as much as you can in and make the very best use of your time. That said, people coming down always ask me for my personal recommendations. Because remember, I've been down here a long, long time, and I'm not going to set you up with a regular old boring tour guide. I've always felt that run-of-the-mill tourist packages are for clueless gringos, and I wouldn't do that to you. That's where John Galt comes in. With him, you'll see and do some amazing things that the average tourist or visitor just never get the chance to experience. Not to mention, he's been an expat down here for 3 or 4 years now and is a wealth of information. If you do take one or both of his trips, it'll be something that you'll be talking about for a long, long time. That's for sure. Okay, now I'm going to tell you a little story that I've been wanting to tell for 3 years, and I could not tell it until now. Not on the air, anyway. Why? If I'd have told it sooner, it could have been a little dangerous for me to open my mouth. So here goes. About 3 years ago, I was in Guatemala, at my dentist's office in Guatemala City. By the way, a guy who speaks 100% perfect English and got his oral surgery residency up in the States. First world all the way. Anyway, I had to have one of those dreaded root canals. I know. Some people don't believe them. I don't really believe in them either. But you know what? It's better than having a hole in your face. And implants, well, I'm not ready for that yet. And you know, right now I'm in pretty good health. But if things take a turn for the worse in the future, those root canal teeth will be the first things to go. I can assure you of that. However, it's not a good look for a gringo. Let's just say I'm not yet willing to embrace the white trash culture. Not just yet. So anyway, my dentist doesn't do root canals, so he called in a root canal specialist, an endodontist. By the way, like I mentioned in a past show, root canals are unbelievably cheap down here compared to up in the first world. Endodontists can keep their costs way down because they don't have their own offices, not like up in the States. Thus, zero overhead. They just have a little briefcase and they go from dentist's office to dentist's office doing root canals. That's one of the reasons they'll charge only around $100 to $200 for a root canal when you're off the gringo tourist trail, that is. Now, for those of you up in the States who've been in that painful oral predicament, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, don't say it can't happen to you. If you live long enough, it will be an eventuality. Some of you already know that root canals up in the States will run $1,000 to $2,000, even more. That in itself should be enough to make you want to vote with your feet. Anyway, it was around 4 in the afternoon and the root canal specialist came in and first thing he did was look at his watch and say, you know, I got to get out of here at 5 o'clock, so if we don't finish today, we'll just set another appointment. Now, oddly enough, as he was working, about every 5 minutes, he'd stop to look at his watch. And he'd even occasionally get up, look out the window at the entrance to the building in the parking lot. Now, to me, he seemed way too preoccupied with whatever was supposed to happen at 5 o'clock. And finally, I said, man, that appointment of yours must be pretty important. And he said, yeah, you don't know how important it is. Then he crossed his fingers and said, if this thing goes down, I'll be the hero of the family. And I said, what kind of a deal is it, if you don't mind me asking? Now, remember, I'm with this guy for about an hour. We're chit-chatting back and forth, and I know there's something up. So I'm pumping him subtly for information the best I can. That's when your gringo advantage kicks in, by the way. especially with someone like him who speaks English but does not get a chance to practice it. So he's babbling away in English, telling me about this fantastically valuable real estate his family owns in Antigua, Guatemala, right in the high-rent zone a couple of blocks from the Central Park. He said his family's got three fantastic colonial houses worth over $1 million apiece, each on its own square block. And he said they've been on the market a long, long time, and finally they've got a bite, a live one. And he's going to come here at 5 o'clock. They're going to go inspect those properties, and hopefully the guy will buy one or more of them. I said, you mean you've got three of those places? And then he almost blushed, and he said, wait a minute. I'm not a rich guy, if that's what you're thinking. In fact, he said, I came from a middle-class family, and I had to work my way through school. Then, he said, I got lucky. And I married the daughter of a very wealthy landowner. Only he said he's not so wealthy anymore. He said nowadays his father-in-law is pretty much out of it and needs 24/7 care. So by default, the dentist told me, he, the son-in-law, is now in charge of the property and estates, a job he doesn't want because they're all losing money. So, as it turns out, his family's fortunes aren't so fortunate anymore. Not like in the old days when his father-in-law was in good health. And he said those three big colonial properties needed tons of maintenance and upkeep and around-the-clock staff. Too much to maintain, and they've been on the market for a while now and no takers. That's when he dropped a bombshell and said, you know who's coming to see the property? Otto Perez. At that time, the president of Guatemala. A guy, by the way, who at the time was making $80,000 a year as president, and before that, was a general in the Guatemalan army making about $15,000 a year. Then he dropped a bigger bombshell and said, yeah, and if he likes it, he said he'll pay cash. And I said, wait a minute. How can he pay cash? Where'd he get the money? Then he said, do you have to ask? Do you remember a couple of months ago when a big foreign company won the contract for the Port Authority? Now, Guatemala's got both an Atlantic and a Pacific coast and very busy ports. Thousands of containers going in and out every month. And for that contract, the president got himself a multi-million dollar kickback in cash. That's the way they do things down here. And I said, really? In cash? How is that possible? He said, oh, this is Latin America. It's done all the time. And then he said, you know, he's got to spend that money somehow. He can't exactly put it into a bank. That's traceable. So you either stick it in a big safe or you buy a lot of things for cash. Helicopters, yachts, real estate. Now, I've been down in Latin America long enough to know all that stuff's true. But the question in my mind at the time was, how did he know all that stuff? How did he know the details? I could only assume it was because he came from a very well-connected family. And why was he telling me, a guy he'd just met? Partially, I guess, because it was that gringo advantage working for me. But deep down, I know that there's so much impunity in all levels of government that it really doesn't matter if you talk about stuff like that, even if it is true, because, well, these guys are basically untouchable. The truth is, everyone who's a little on the ball down here in Latin America knows, presidents, vice presidents, congressmen, etc., they all get to skim or get a kickback when they hand out contracts. Just part of the perks of being a government official. So anyway, 5 o'clock rolls around, he gets a phone call. He goes to the window, and he says, they're here. Then I got up and looked out the window, and sure enough, four cars, three big black bulletproof SUVs for the bodyguards, of course, and the president's car, presumably the one with the little Guatemalan flag hanging off the aerial. Then the specialist packed his bag and said, wish me luck. See you next week. Sure enough, the next week's appointment rolled around and the subject, of course, came up. He said, we didn't do the deal. He decided to buy something else. Big disappointment, but what are you going to do? Okay, so that was 3 years ago. Fast forward to about a year ago. That's when Otto Perez, the president of Guatemala, was forced to resign and placed under beach house arrest. Meanwhile, his trial for corruption and illegal enrichment has been going on for a couple of months. Now, at the same time, his vice president, Roxana Baldetti, along with more than 50 other high-level Guatemalan officials, including every single cabinet member, were placed under beach house arrest too. That is, the ones that they could find, because there's still a dozen or so of these guys on the lam out of the country on Interpol's capture list. Originally, the president, vice president, and all these other crooks were put on trial for skimming import-export taxes to the tune of $100 million plus a year. In fact, When the cops searched the house of the secretary to the vice president, they found $5 million in cash in the living room sofa. I know, right now you might be thinking, there's all kinds of corruption in Latin America, big deal. Here's the point. There's a lot of articles floating around right now coming from the First World Press saying that the U.S. set this guy up. Topple the government, so Washington could have a more pliable regime. You know all that clandestine crap the U.S. is noted for doing in countries that aren't so friendly to them. In fact, ex-president Otto Perez is giving out interviews to the international press saying just that. That it's all a sham and the U.S. set him up. And you know, funny enough, just a week ago I saw him on the stand because they're televising this, crying crocodile tears, soiling his Armani suit and his $300 silk tie, boo-hoo. Again, swearing the U.S. had set him up. It was an Oscar-winning sociopathic performance, let me tell you. Anyway, here's the kicker. About a week ago, the huge breaking news in all the Latin media reported another unrelated presidential corruption scandal. You guessed it. They got the goods on him on that $10 million cash kickback for awarding that port contract some 3 years earlier. Which is why now I can report what happened to me 3 years ago in the dentist's office. That said, I felt it was time to tell that story now, especially in light of the fact that a lot of you guys and gals up there are sending me links to articles and blogs saying that he's been set up by the U.S. government. Yes, certainly, I believe that the U.S. is totally corrupt and involved in all kinds of unconstitutional dirty tricks. Not just now, but going back to the American Civil War and earlier, even to Andrew Jackson's time, when bankers and factions in the U.S. government tried to have him bumped off for vetoing the creation of a U.S. federal bank. So anyway, in Guatemalan ex-president Otto Perez's case, the guy really is a dirty, rotten, lying, pustulant, sociopathic scumbag, who, by the way, always shows up at church on Sunday for the photo op, of course. Yes, all these crooks cling to Jesus and spill crocodile tears when necessary. All part of the act. Oh, and by the way, speaking of money and morality, what about honest good citizens that would accept money like that? Well, technically, money is inert. It has no morality. So you've got good people and despicable people, both injecting and subtracting inert money in and out of the system. Besides that, what's legal in one country can be illegal in another. For example, a big international drug company gave Otto Perez a $1 million home when he was in office. In Latin countries, that's 100% legal, which makes things really complicated. Okay, we're getting towards the end right now. Don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube, type in The Expat Files, click on the first photo you see, which will be Santa laying in a hammock. And you'll see all the shows, starting with the latest one.
South of the border.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me, just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.